Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the President's visit to Puerto Rico today and examine a number of issues raised in Obama's speech with Luis Martinez Fernandez. He is an expert on Puerto Rico and a professor of history at the University of Central Florida in Orlando, which has one of the world's highest concentrations of Puerto Ricans, who are an increasingly important voting bloc in the key swing state of Florida. Then, with today's confirmation by the Senate Armed Services Committee of Leon Panetta to be the next Secretary of Defense, we will discuss the expectation that Panetta will make the $400 billion in budget cuts he's promised. William Hartung, the author of Prophets of War, Lockheed Martin and the Making of the Military-Industrial Complex, joins us to question whether outgoing Defense Secretary Gates really did save the taxpayer $300 billion and whether Panetta will be able to eliminate any of the greater number of major weapons programs now in place since Gates arrived at the Pentagon. Then finally, R. Clark Cooper, Executive Director of the Log Cabin Republicans, joins us. He will give his analysis of how the seven Republican presidential hopefuls fared in last night's debate and whether those who were absent stand a better chance than those who were present. I'm now joined by Luis Martinez Fernandez, who is a professor of history at the University of Central Florida. He is a historian of Latin America and the Caribbean who focuses on the histories of Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Dominican Republic. He was born in Cuba, graduated from a Puerto Rican university and currently lives and teaches in Orlando, Florida, which has one of the world's highest concentrations of Puerto Ricans. Welcome to Background Briefing, Luis Martinez Fernandez.
Good afternoon to you and all listeners.
And Luis, the president's trip to Puerto Rico is the first official presidential trip since JFK went there in 1961. And I guess in terms of what he said there, is that he will back a referendum on the island's status and saying that essentially he would support any choice the Puerto Rican people made. Now, what I think most of our listeners probably don't know is the choices that do exist in terms of a referendum. There are four of them: independence, a U.S. state, a free association, or a commonwealth. Can you walk us through those choices?
Sure. Historically, those have been the options. The three primary options being, on the one hand, statehood, on the other hand, full independence, and then two in-between or middle-of-the-ground formulas. One is the current Commonwealth status, which is very similar to the free associated state. And that means that Puerto Rico, as that sort of a hybrid status, has some of the responsibilities and some of the privileges of being a state, and also some of the responsibilities and privileges of being a free country.
Well, one of the anomalies there is, of course, that Puerto Rico, you're U.S. citizens. Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, but they cannot vote in federal elections, except they can't vote in the general elections, but they can vote in the primaries. So, you know, explain that.
That's right. That is one of the aberrations, if you will, of the present status. And when it becomes the thorniest, it has to do with the inability to vote for a president or for representatives in Congress that then make decisions about war and peace. And on the other hand, Puerto Ricans who are U.S. citizens are subject to a draft, if there is one, to fight wars over which they have no saying.
So there are more. The assumption here about President Obama's trip today to Puerto Rico, where he's going to spend a couple of days, is that he is going down there to shore up Democratic support in Central Florida, where there are about 850,000 Puerto Ricans living there, of the nearly 5 million here in the United States, which is more than what the 4 million that live on the island itself.
Yes, that's correct. Just in the past few years, the Puerto Rican population in the mainland has surpassed the population on the island, which is not too anomalous. There are many small islands in the Caribbean, Barbados comes to mind, that have as many people living abroad as they have on the island. And yes, I would agree with the point that this trip is more about shoring up a Puerto Rican-Florida vote than anything that has to do with Puerto Rico per se. That said, the links, and certainly the political links between the island-based population, Puerto Ricans, I mean, and Puerto Ricans in the United States, these links are very, very close, and there's a great deal of political collaboration, if you will. I have heard of people who live in Orlando, but they're not official residents of Orlando, yet they travel to Puerto Rico to vote there. I have heard and I've actually witnessed efforts to register voters here on in Florida, Puerto Rican voters, and these efforts are strongly supported and actually even coordinated by political forces on the island. So it's more of a transnational population, if you will, a population that is very young in terms of, or I should say very recent in terms of its residence in Florida. And those links are very, very strong.
But we know about the Cuban-American voting bloc down in Florida that is a key voting bloc, and it is fairly, consistently Republican. I assume that one of the reasons the president's down in Puerto Rico courting votes in Florida is that the people as you mentioned, they have strong ties to the island, that they will vote Democrat in Central Florida.
Yes, that's correct. Actually, I've been thinking about this quite a bit over the last couple of years, and we know, of course, that the Cuban vote in Miami and elsewhere in South Florida is strongly Republican. However, that has been changing. So if we look at second-generation Cuban-Americans, they tend to vote slightly Democratic, actually. If we look at those Cubans who have arrived since the 1990s and have already become U.S. citizens, they're also leaning Democratic. So that Cuban Republican vote reality is changing. But I should also add that the Puerto Rican vote in Central Florida and elsewhere in the state of Florida is a population that has begun to neutralize the Cuban Republican vote. We saw that very clearly here in Orange County, the county where Orlando sits, and it's almost unbelievable the fact that not one presidential candidate since Franklin Delano Roosevelt had won in Orange County until Obama in 2008. And then to see that margin of victory was close to 20 points, that's just incredible. The same thing happened in Osceola County, which is the county where Kissimmee is, and that is a strong Puerto Rican bastion. So that is my thesis, actually, that the Puerto Rican vote, with its Democratic tendency, about 66% or so, is already neutralizing the Republican vote among Cubans, and that's very important, and that explains why so much attention on the hand of Obama towards Puerto Rico and towards Puerto Rican voters.
Again, I'm speaking with Luis Martinez Fernandez, a professor of history at the University of Central Florida, where he researches the histories of Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Dominican Republic. So the other issues that the president has been dealing with down in Puerto Rico, again, he's basically said whatever the Puerto Ricans decide, that he will honor. But there's been a history of political tension, has there not? And there were a group of 20 or so Puerto Rican nationalist demonstrators, pro-independence demonstrators, who had an all-night vigil in San Juan ahead of the president's visit, calling for the release of three Puerto Rican nationalists imprisoned in the United States. So since you're a historian, I have a vague memory. Was it a group of Puerto Ricans who went into the United States Congress, I think, when Harry Truman was president, and shot up and killed some people?
Yeah, that's correct. And there was also an attempt on the vice president's life. This was in the 1950s. Most of those participants have died. A couple were released, I believe, by Jimmy Carter. And these are still sticking points, really. I'm not sure what Obama will do. I think that because these individuals were accused of terrorist activities, this is not the best of times to release people who have been charged with those charges. And certainly the fact that Obama politically is so weak at this point in the United States, I don't think it's the appropriate time.
Right, but what's the history of this animus, though? Because I my understanding is that the president was greeted fairly warmly down there, and that the decisions about the future of the island rested with the people on the island, and they simply haven't been able to make up their minds. They've had three or four attempts at it at referenda, and so the confusion seems to be on that side. So I'm trying to get an understanding of what radicalizes people to the point where they'd walk into the United States Congress and shoot up a bunch of congressmen.
Yes, well, Puerto Rico was acquired in 1898 by the United States as a result of what is called the Spanish-American War. And from the very beginning, there was opposition by some against U.S. occupation and then the establishment of a civilian government thereafter. There was opposition to the quote-unquote imposition of U.S. citizenship on all Puerto Ricans. So that has very deep roots. I need to say, however, that when we talk about the nationalist and the pro-independence forces on the island, they are a very small minority. The pro-independence party, actually, during the last election in 2008, did not get enough votes to be automatically inscribed for the following election. So it's a small group. It's a very vocal group, I should say, and they are adamantly opposed to the establishment of statehood for Puerto Rico. We all know that once you become a state, you can't break away. The Civil War in this country was all about that. On the other hand, the two other formulas that are the main formulas are the statehood formula. The current party in power on the island is a pro-statehood party. The other formula is the Commonwealth formula, and that is supported by the Popular Democratic Party, which was voted out of office in 2008. So what we have is a situation where these two parties each carries about 45 to 48% of the vote, and there's no movement in either direction. That is, these two parties have been alternating in power without moving beyond the 50% vote that would be needed to start any negotiation. The fact that Obama said that this is up to the Puerto Ricans to decide is nothing new. Presidents have been saying that all along. And the problem is that how does that happen? How does that happen? How do we move towards a change in status when there's a stalemate between two parties, each with about 45% of the vote? Now, the way that can be altered, and I don't think it was a good idea when President Bush created a status commission, and what they did was that they stacked the odds in favor of statehood, the way in which they proposed not one but two referendums, actually. The first option was, do you want Puerto Rico to change or to stay the way it is? Now, if the decision to change had the majority vote, then the only two options that were proposed by this presidential committee were independence or statehood.
Well, I can't understand how for example, Congressman Gutierrez represents Illinois. He grew up on the island. He's calling for independence. Where would the how would an independent state be viable? I take it the support on the island isn't that great for that. But there is obviously an emotional and historical component there at play. Is that right?
That's true. It's also a matter of identity and a natural inclination for people to rule themselves. All of that is very understandable. However, Puerto Rico as it stands is a poor country. Certainly we compare with some of the poorest states in the United States. Now, what would happen if all of the billions of dollars that flow to Puerto Rico as a result of this special relationship, what would happen if these dollars no longer flow to the island? The pro-independence leadership claims that Puerto Rico can on its own stay afloat. I haven't seen the numbers, and I'm convinced that would not be the case. Just look around and see other countries nearby, the Dominican Republic, for example. They're very, very poor countries. And Puerto Rico, on the other hand, is very poor in terms of natural resources. Even Cuba, they found oil recently that could be enough to actually export. Puerto Rico does not have those resources.
So just in closing, then, Luis Martinez Fernandez, it sounds like, though, the fact that the U.S., that Puerto Rico is kind of a welfare state, but the people can't vote, that smacks to me of a kind of paternalism that's a little unpalatable. And who's responsible for the fact that these people can't vote? They're U.S. citizens. They can vote in the primaries, but they can't vote in the general elections. And, you know, frankly, that doesn't make any sense. So just in closing, what's the explanation for that?
I agree. It makes no sense. Congress makes those determinations, and Congress agreed gradually over the years in the 20th century to grant Puerto Rico more and more powers. However, the power for Puerto Ricans to vote while living on the island is one that has not been granted. And in closing, I would say this could be very problematic. Imagine what Republicans would say if we all of a sudden have two new senators from Puerto Rico and seven or eight congressmen, most of whom would be Democratic. So the Republican Party would not like to see that happen.
Well, now you're making sense. Now I see the picture. Thank you so much for joining us. By the way, the governor of Puerto Rico is actually a Republican. I thank you for joining us, Luis Martinez Fernandez.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Again, I was speaking with Luis Martinez Fernandez, who's professor of history at the University of Central Florida. He's an historian of Latin America and the Caribbean who focuses on the histories of Cuba, Puerto Rico, and the Dominican Republic. He was born in Cuba, graduated from a Puerto Rican university, and currently lives and teaches in Orlando, Florida, which has one of the world's highest concentrations of Puerto Ricans. Let's now take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about whether the new Secretary of Defense just confirmed today will actually live up to his promises to cut the defense budget.
La perdición.